The Parsha of Bahar is devoted in the main to Inyanim of Eretz Yisrael, and we'll see that there are quite a number of very beautiful themes that will emerge from the Meforshim this evening. The Sidra, as you know, opens with the Dinim of Shemitah, of the sabbatical year, and a matter of some interest is the fact that the entire theme of Shemitah is introduced with what appears to be a double phrase. Daber el b'nei Yisrael ve'omarto aleihem. So daber, as we all know, is a loshon kosher, a more severe type of address. Amira is amira rako, a gentler type of speaking. And the question that we have to ask is, al pipshuto shel mikro, why the Torah would choose to introduce the laws of Shemitah with a combination of Daber and Viyomarta. And the Meforesh who addresses this particular problem is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, at the beginning of his comments to Pasuk Beis. In other words, what he is going to suggest is that there is an aspect of the laws of Shemitah which are Loshon, a Dibur, which is kosher, and there is an aspect of the laws of the Shemitah which are more correctly assessed as Amira. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Tam HaKeitel, the reason for the repetition, Daber and Amarto, Litzad, the reason is, Sheyesh b'mitzvah zu, there is in the mitzvah of Shemitah two items. Number one, Inyan Meniyas Avodas Adama, the fact that a farmer is told you're not allowed to work your farm this year, v'havkoras haperos, and it is a second aspect of Shemitah, which is a declaration of hefker, declaring all your produce of that year to be ownerless. Havkoras haperos ha'olim me'ho'ilonos v'tzimichei ho'adom. So there's two central and crucial aspects to Shemitah. Number one, a prohibition against working the soil. And number two, the fact that you must declare all your produce of that year to be ownerless. Now, k'neged minyas avodas ha'adama v'hachonos hatzlochoso. In regard to that aspect of Shemitah, which relates to the prohibition against working the soil, which is something very difficult to say to a farmer, you can't work the farm this year. In regard to that aspect of Shemitah, Omar, the Torah said, Daber, which is Lashon Koshi, an expression of severity. It's something which people find very difficult to accept. Ki hu dovor she'ein ritzon adam chafetzovo. Because this is something that the average individual is not too happy about. Letzad heyoso minyas hatov, because this prevents him from reaping a harvest from his own soil. So therefore, in regard to that aspect of Shemitah, the Torah introduced Shemitah with the word Daber. Ucheneged hafkoras hatzomeach, and in regards to the law of Shemitah, which obligates every Jew to declare the produce of that year ownerless, Omar, he says, the Torah says, V'yomarta, that's a gentler type of address. Why? Ki hu dovor shekol echad yismach bo. Because it's something that people are not too troubled about, sheyomar, because a person, when he recognizes that this is something that is going to be done by every individual, he'll say to himself, yodo bakol. That means I can go wherever I want, and I can take whatever I want from whatever field I want. So in regards to that particular aspect of Shemitah, we use the word ve'omarta. That's number one. Another reason why the word v'yomarta is mentioned could also be gam letzad ha-havtochos. It could also be because it is in reference to the promises shetziva, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has guaranteed the inyan in regards to Shemitah, as we see later on in the Sidra, when the Jew will say, how will we eat? We haven't planted, where there'll be no harvest, where is the food going to come from? The Torah promises v'yasos es hatevua l'shalosh hashanim. I promise you that even when Shemitah is followed by Yovel, and there will be 2 years when there will be no reaping, 2 years when there will be no harvesting, even then there will be 3 years of produce which will be given to you in the sixth year. And therefore it is connected that promise, Omar v'Omarto, that the Torah says v'Omarto, because that is an amiro, that is a declaration, hamisaedes es halev, which gladdens the heart. So here we have the first suggestion of the Yoreh Chaim HaKodesh, that daber, which is a severe type of expression, is to introduce the severity of the law of Shemitah, which forbids the Jew to work the soil. The omarta, which is an amir or rako, which is a gentler type of speaking, that can refer either to the duty that every Jew has to declare his produce ownerless, the produce from that year, because that is a type of law which does not in any way trouble him, because it means he has access to the produce of every field in Israel. Or it could be that the word v'omarto is a gentler type of address, is in reference to the promises which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, that there will be sufficient in the sixth year of the sabbatical cycle to enable us to live without any problems of famine or starvation throughout those particular years when we will not be able to work the soil. That's one approach. Od yirtzeh, another suggestion as to why there is daber and v'omarta, it could be like this. Litzad shemitzvah zu shel shevisasa oretz yesh bo shenei devorim. Let us look, says the Yoreh Chaim HaKodesh, and consider. What is this statement made by HaKodesh Baruch Hu? You're not allowed to work the land. You must observe the laws of Shemitah. On the one hand, when we greet these laws, we could say to ourselves, they are Devar Melech Shilton Sha'al Avodov Chiyuv Lekayem Kol Davar. We could say to ourselves, these laws of Shemitah represent a declaration by the King of Kings, and we as his subjects have no alternative. Whether you like it or not, you have to keep the laws. So from that point of view, the laws of Shemitah represent Davar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no, and you have to listen, because he is the king, and you are the servant. V'hasheni, there is a second way of looking at the laws of Shemitah. Hagam sheyihye dovor zeh, bein odom lechaviru yischayev aso sukuviyadin. Let us look on it as a type of agreement with which we are familiar in the area of between man and man. Ki hanosein matono lechavero umasno imo b'shach hamatono tino o kayom. What happens when A gives B a gift? And A says to B, you get this gift on condition that you adhere to certain stipulations. Do you call that a severe type of situation? After all, you're being given a matono. There happens to be a few strings attached. But the fact of the matter is, there is no way in which you would call this a harsh type of agreement. So on the one hand, as he will say in the concluding paragraph, on the one hand we can say regarding the laws of the Shemitah year, that they are laws which are severe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu laid them down, and we have no alternative but to observe them. On the other hand, we could assess them in the following way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us an entire country in perpetuity. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is insisting on certain conditions. That seems to us most acceptable and certainly more than generous. Therefore we can suggest, in the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu bishas hamatono masna tenoim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the land with conditions. As the Pasuk says, Asher ani nosein lochem, which I am now giving you. For lo omar, and doesn't say, Asher nosati, which I gave to you. Asher al kein omar. Now that we know that there are two ingredients in Shemitah, we can look on it either as the laws of a king which have to be observed by his subjects, or we can look on the laws of Shemitah as terms of an agreement between two parties. is keneged Devar Melech Shilton, looking on Shemitah as laws given to us by the king which we have to keep whether we like it or not. Assessing them in that light, the Torah uses the word daver, severe. Ukeneged hayos hadover mischayev mehamishpot, and if we look on them as items which we have to observe because they are part of the deal, quote unquote, assessing them in that way, it says ve'omarta. Perush, meaning below tam gezeilas melech yekavlu hamamar. That even were it not the fact that it is the King of Kings who is making these laws, we would still find it more than pleasurable and convenient to keep these laws because they are part of a deal which is very much to our benefit. So here we have a number of approaches in regards to whether we should describe the laws of Shemitah as laws which are severe. And the first interpretation was to suggest that our laws which are severe in Shemitah and laws which are not. And then there is the suggestion that we have to recognize that the laws of Shemitah represent on the one hand a gezeiras hamelech, a decree from the king, which we as his subjects have to keep. But on the other hand, we should always keep in mind the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us an entire country, and these laws of Shemitah represent the conditions which are part of the gift. And therefore, in that regard, we will introduce the laws of Shemitah with Yom HaMatzah. Okay. What I would like to do now is to have a look at a very, very wonderful essay in the Kli Yoko. I have to tell you that it is with reluctance that I prepare a number of lengthy items for the shiur. I recognize that many times items are rather long, but on the other hand, there are inyonim which are of such crucial importance that if I will look for those meforshim who put them into two or three lines, the search will be fruitless. So you'll have to, I don't crave your indulgence, I would never use those words in regards to the Pelish, but you will see when we come to the end of the Kli Yoker how essential it is to see it in its totality. The Kli Yoker is now going to research the reasons behind the Shemitah year. V'shavaso ha'oret shavos l'ashem. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, then you work for 6 years, and on the seventh year there is a Shabbos for HaKadosh Baruch. Says the Kli Yoker, V'ta'am mitzvah zu, in regards to the reason for this mitzvah, yesh deos chalukos, there are different opinions. Ki rabim omrim, because there are some who suggest, shahatam hu shetishvos ha'oretz, that the reason for the Shemitah year is to give the land an opportunity to rest. So that the land will be able to recoup its energies, so that when we come to plant after Shemitah, the land will be able to give us a better type of produce. And this is the view which is presented by the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. And there are many who argue with this approach. And they say, if the whole purpose of Shemitah is to make sure that the land keeps functioning in its most potent form, so why is the penalty for not keeping the Shemitah to be sent into exile? After all, if you want Midah, keneged Midah, and this is the reason for Shemitah, yehye onshom, surely the penalty should be, if you don't keep Shemitah, shelo tosif ha'oretz teis kocho lohem, that the land will not give you the vitality that you want from it. You are told if you'll keep the Shemitah year, then the land will give you everything you need. But you want to be a bigger chacham. That's approaching it from the Moreh Nevuchim's point of view. You want to be a bigger chacham and you want to say, no, we are going to plan our own arrangement of how to make sure the soil gives us everything we want, which will not include Shemitah. The punishment for that approach would be that dafke, with your approach, it won't work. The Yod, and furthermore, if the whole purpose of Shemitah, according to the Moreh Nevuchim, is for the sake of the land, she'ein ze Shabbos l'Hashem, Why would you call that resting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for an exalted spiritual purpose? You're not keeping Shmita for an exalted spiritual purpose, according to the Rambam. You're keeping Shmita because that's the way the botanists say it works. A little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit of vitamin C. You're not doing it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shemitah is Letzorech HaOrez, for the sake of the land, the way the Rambam presents it. Umahu Sheyomar, and furthermore, I have a cash on the Rambam. What do we mean when we say that when you don't keep the Shemitah and you are exiled out of Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk says, Hos Tirzeh HaOrez Eschav Soseho, then the land will appease the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu concerning the sabbatical year. Is ma taviach bazeh? What will the earth gain? What will the land profit? Sheyigalu mimeno Yisrael, that Israel will be exiled from it. V'yeshvu aleha hagoyim, and goyim will come into the land. Asher liyolam bo yavodu, and they will dafka work every year on the soil. V'yechtish bo soaretz bo shamo mehem, and how will the earth rest? How will the land rest? So what? According to the Ma'ariv Nebuchim, what do you gain if the Jewish people are sent into exile? What does the land gain? How does it appease the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Jews have gone out, they worked Shmita, and now they're exiled. And what comes in their place? Goyim, who also worked the land in Shmita. So what's gained? So he's not too impressed with the reason offered by the Ma'ariv Nebuchim. Ube Yakeda, Rav Yitzchok Aramo, the author of Akedas Yitzchok, not san tam acher. He gives another reason. The Yovar, and he says, Shetachlis mitzvah zu, the purpose of this mitzvah is, Lizkor chidush ha'olam, to remember that the world was created ex nihilo. V'lizkor yemos olam v'sof yemei cheldo, and to remind us that the world is going to continue for 6,000 years, and at the seventh millennium things are going to come to a halt. The chain cause of Marina Harav Rav Yitzchok Abarbanel. The host is owed no fach mishalo, and Abarbanel agrees with the Akedas Yitzchok and adds a certain amount of his own, but basically he agrees with the Akedas Yitzchok. The Gamzer Ochot Mikiliosai says the Kliyokar, I also find that difficult to accept as the rationale for Shmita. You know why? Ki Hudomeli Yehuda V'yod Likra, a reference to a Gemara in Kiddushin, which really means, if that is the theme, then the whole theme of Shmita is redundant. Why? Because to enunciate that theme, we have a Shabbos every week. And if you can't get the message home when you have it once a week, you're certainly not going to get it home if you have it once every 7 years. Because do you not know that the Shabbos day, which comes every week, it comes to remind us also of the fact that the world was created from nothing. And if the message won't get home by having it drummed into you once a week, is Mayo Shieno Zehaboli Itim Lechokim, so how are you going to press it home in Shmita, which comes once every 7 years? So I refuse to accept the opinion of the Akedas Yitzchok either. Ukedei liyashev kamo dikdukim v'leshona parsha, and in order to explain many statements which are made in the parsha, Omer ani, I am going to suggest to you, shetam mitzvah zu, that the reason for the mitzvah of Shmita is, lahashrish es Yisrael b'midas hu'emuno v'habitochon v'ashem, to implant into the hearts and minds of the Jewish people who live in that country, to have faith and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki choshash HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was afraid. Pen bevoa melawaretz, lest when they come to the land, yisasku b'yavulas to Adoma, they will busy themselves in regards to working the land, al haminik hativi. And they will say to themselves, we have got to approach it from the point of view of nature, and ignore the fact that there is a God in the world. The Chasher Kabir Motso Yodom, and when they will find that by conducting themselves on the basis of natural law on its own, Yishkechu Es Hashem, they will forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yosiru Bitchonam Mimenu, and they will remove their trust from Him, the Yachshavu, and they will think, Ki Kocham V'yotzim Yodom Motso Lehem Es HaChayel Hazeh,
They will say to themselves, listen here, friend, there is no God. It's a country like every other country. And when you sow, you reap. And when you do it wisely, and you conform to the laws of nature, then it's successful. And if you don't do it that way, then it's not successful. And it has nothing at all to do with our Kodesh Baruch Hu. That belongs to somewhere else. And they will say to themselves, the Olam Kimin Hogo Noheg, the world continues on its ordinary way, cause and effect. V'yachshavu, and they will think, Sheha'oret Shelohem Hi, that the land belongs to them, the Heim Abalim, and they are the owners, V'yenzu Losom, and nobody else is involved. That's what might happen to the people coming into the land and conducting themselves as the English do in England, as the French do in France, etc., etc. Al kein, therefore, hotziyom Hashem min aminik hativi legamrei. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show our people that the land is not to be understood in terms of the laws of nature. But everything in this country is ruled by different forces. And the first thing you have to know, Ki b'shei shanim, because you should know firstly that in 6 years, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu proves it to us is enunciated in the Parsha. You know and I know, says the Kli Yoker. When people come to a land, what do? When they conduct themselves according to the ordinary laws of nature, they say to themselves like this, 2 years, we'll plant. 3rd year, we leave it fallow. That's the way you maintain the potency of the land. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, this land is not being ruled by the laws of nature. I'm the balabos of the land. The pasuk starts, Sheish Shanim Tizra Sadecha. 6 years you can plant your field. Midei Shana Mishana, and keep it going. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I promise you, that the land will not lose any of its vitality, any of its strength. That's number one. And I'll tell you something else, says the Torah, in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is another miracle within the miracle. After you have planted for 6 years, in Bashan of Ashishis lo yakish chelo, you might say to me, oh right, there is a promise that after 6 years, the power, the vitality of the land will not be weakened. But maybe you'll say to me, but there's no way the land can become even more vital and even more potent with that type of approach year after year after year. Therefore, v'yomer Hashem, adarab, on the contrary, shebashona hashishis, in the 6th year, yosif lo koach kolkach, there will be such strength in the soil, ad shenemar, to the extent that it says, v'tzivisi es birchasi bashona hashishis, I will command a blessing on the 6th year, v'yostos es hatvua l'sholosh hashonim, and there will be enough produce for 3 years. V'yalidei kol hamotzim alolo asher samti b'yodecho. And by the means of all these signs that I will give you, that you will work the land for 6 years and there will be no lessening in its strength. On the contrary, when it comes to the 6th year, there will be a produce for 3 years. Teda, through these signs you will know, ki li chol ha'oretz, that the land is in fact controlled, not by nature, but by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Einei Hashem Elokecha bo, meireishis shona v'yadachris shona. That it is the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are on the land from the beginning of the year to the other. V'yal yedei zeh, and it is through the medium of these phenomena, yihyu einecha nisuos, that your eyes will be lifted up el Hashem, to Hashem, k'moshe motzinu b'yiridas hamon, in the same way as we found in regards to the coming of the manna, liyoma, which came every day, k'dei sheyiyu eineyim nesuos el Hashem tamid v'yiftechu bo samid, so that the Jews should have explicit and implicit faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kach inyan ha-shmita, so it is with shmita. Shelo yavdu ho-adomo kol shono shevi'is, that they are not to work the land for an entire year, ein zera, no planting, v'ein kotzira, no harvest. V'yishmuchu al anes, and they should rely on a miracle. Shetaseh hatavua l'sholosh shonim, that there should be enough in the sixth year for 3 years. Hareshine maise nisim, do you have got two nisim? One, the land will not decline, and number two, year number six is going to give you a bumper harvest. U'sholoshim al kulo, and a third miracle, that the produce which will be produced in the sixth year, it'll look to you like an ordinary harvest. I mean to say, you've got a field, and you've planted wheat, and you've planted corn, and you've planted barley. Does it mean that you're going to have three times the quantity? Not at all. You've got the same field. So what's going to happen? How is it going to produce a harvest which will sustain you for 3 years? Mikol mokum yishlach Hashem es habrocha ba'asomeihem sheyochal kimo umizborech b'veyov ad shetaspik atavu l'sholosh shonim. What is going to happen is going to be the harvest quantitatively is going to be the same as every year. But the miracle is going to be that the quantity which usually suffices only for 1 year is going to suffice for three. And he proves it from the language of the Pasuk, Midagaoma, because in regards to the produce of that sixth year, it says, V'yasos es hativua, it shall produce the aforementioned harvest. Meaning, a harvest similar in quantity to the previous years. The hey hayadiyah with a definite article. Ivahoyalomar, it should have said, the yosos tevu alisholosh, it should produce a harvest? No. Elisharomas behe hayadiyah. But the indication is by using the definite article, sha'osa hatevu or shahira gila la sos mide sholoshona, that the usual harvest which it gives every year, came to aseh gamba shono ashishis, it will also give in the sixth year, the yosef ashem koach ba'oritz. But there will be such a vitality in the land at she'osos, until it will emerge, she'osa hatzvua, that the same quantity of harvest, taspik, will suffice l'sholosh shonim. V'zeh vaday neis niglo v'godol mikulom. And this is surely a miracle which surpasses the previous two that I have mentioned. Now, so the purpose of the whole inyan of Shemitah is to engender in the Jewish people the inyan, the idea of faith and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a national level, by recognizing that the way we conduct ourselves in Eretz Yisrael has to conform not to the laws of nature but to the laws of the Torah, and not only will our conformity with the laws of the Torah not jeopardize our sustained existence in that land, but on the contrary, it is only through the laws of the Torah that we will in fact remain as a people in the land of Israel. And this is a correct reasoning, more than all the other nations of Meforshim Abachot. Ulefiza, and therefore, dinhu, if in fact the whole basic rationale of Shemitah is to have faith and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is it not then obvious sheyischayevu golos biavon haShemitah, that by not adhering to the laws of Shemitah we are deserving of exile, mitzad chisoron ho'emuna shevohem, because we lack faith in God, ki lo heminu b'Hashem v'lo bodchu b'Yeshuaso, sheyase lehem neis kozeh v'yasiyah satfu l'sholosh shonim, because what will happen will be, if we do not keep the Shemitah, we are showing we have no faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it is a lack of faith which makes us deserving of exile. As indeed the prophet Yirmiyahu says, shoutetu v'chutzos Yerushalayim, speaking about the time of the Churban, go out amongst the, in the streets of Jerusalem, Uduhuru, and know and see, im yeshish mevake shemunim, is there someone who has faith? V'yes, lachla. Then I will forgive the people. Because what Yirmiyahu was saying was, that's the time of the Churban by its reshown, that what the people were showing was a lack of faith. That is why they were exiled. And the lack of faith was shown by the fact that they refused to observe the laws of Shemitah. Now, so since the whole purpose of the laws of Shemitah is to bring about faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the land is a partner in this. So the land is anxious also to be the medium through which faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is achieved. So therefore the Kliyoka goes on to say, Gam ha'oretz atzmo takpid al zeh meyod. That's why the land itself is so particular, as it were. Kiret sona, because the land's desire is, sheyisgalgel zechus zeh al yodo, that this merit should be brought about through it, lechazeku emuna b'Hashem al yodo, in order to strengthen faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the land. The Yod, and furthermore, Shal Yedei Zeh, through the laws of Shemitah Yaminu, people will come to the realization, Ki Kulam Einam Rak Arisei Bekarka, that all we are is hired laborers in the land. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Baal HaSod, and it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the owner of the land. Uvadovar Azeh, and in regards to this matter, Ha'oretz Chafetzo, the land is desirous, Sheyihia HaKadosh Baruch Hu Biyatzmo Baal HaVadoneho. The land wants to be the one through whom the ownership of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his ownership of the land, is revealed. Ki lo yisbarach ha'oretz, that the land belongs to him. Ubebitul ha'shmitos, and therefore when the shmitos are not observed, sheyachziku heima kebalim ba'oretz, when Yidden imagine that they are the only owners of the fields, roi hu, is it not appropriate, shetakvid ha'oretz al zeh, the land becomes upset. Lokach nemar, that is why it says, Oz tirseh ha'oretz es sham soseha. Then the land will be able to appease HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After the Jews have been exiled, the land will be able to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we were very uncomfortable, and we were very upset that the people of Israel did not treat the land as if you are the owner, and therefore now that they have been exiled, we are hoping that your wrath will be appeased. You say to me, as I mentioned before, says the Kliyoka, that Goyim will come in and work the land. Says the Kliyoka, the land of Israel is not worried what Goyim do on the land, because Goyim, even in Eretz Yisrael, are not under the direct involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what they do in the land is not the land's concern. The land's concern is what the Jewish people do in Eretz Yisrael, because they are the ones who are given Eretz Yisrael on tonight. Aval alahu umos lo takpid. But the land of Israel is not worried about the goyim, im yin hagubo minak hativi, whether they conduct themselves according to the laws of nature or not. Ki belav hachi kol hana hagosim al pi ateva. Because in reality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Goyim over to the laws of nature. There is no hashkocha protis amongst Goyim. The Yemba Hem Emunah. And there is no matter of faith that is demanded of Goyim. So what they do in the land is of no concern to the land. What Yidden do in the land is of concern to the land. That's as far as we want to go here. So as you can appreciate, we're dealing here with a very, very major thesis. That is why said the Kliyok of Hashem Sohor et Shabbos Lashem. The Shemitah is a year which is given over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it is through the entire laws of 6 years working the land and a seventh year resting that we come to the realization that the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the land is under the direct control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what I want to do is now to relate this theme to something very unusual. And I want to direct your attention, we'll go back to other things if we have the time. I want to direct your attention now to Perik Chofei Posuk Lamed Ches. Perik Chofei Posuk Lamed Ches. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Oseisi Eschem Meyeretz Mitzrayim. You'll see how it dovetails in with the theme of the Kliyoka. I am Hashem who has brought you out from the land of Egypt. Lo seis lochem es eretz Canaan, to give you the land of Canaan. Lihiyais lochem lelokim, to be a God to you. Now, says Rashi, quoting the Teiras Kehanim, Shekol hador bi eretz Yisroel. Why does it say to give you the land to be to you for a God? Does it mean that if you're not living in Eretz Yisroel, I'm not your God? Says Rashi, Shekol ador b'yeretz Yisrael, if you live in Israel, ani lo le'elokim, I am your God. V'chol ha'yetzim imena, but if you leave Eretz Yisrael, ke'oved avodah zarah, it's like worshiping idols. Now that's strong words. This is not a propaganda booklet. It's a Sefer Torah. So we have to understand exactly what is going on here. Rashi b'shem Teilas Kehanim in his Gemara in Ksubis says a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his God. Person is outside, it's like he is worshipping Avodah Zarah. Here we have two Marei Mekomos which are most interesting. The first one is the Pnei Yehoshua commenting on this statement, which, as we know, is taken from Gemara Ksubis Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis. Tana Rabbana, L'yayilam Yodah Rodem V'yeretz Yisrael, this is the Gemara which says a person should always live in Israel. Shekol Ador V'yeretz Yisrael, a person who lives in Israel, Deume Kemisha Yeshlo Eloka, is like one who has a God. And a person who lives outside Eretz Yisrael is like one who has no God. What's the theme? Says the Pnei Yehoshua, Tamo Mevuor, the reason I would suggest is as follows. Lefi Shebechutz Lohoretz, because in Chutz Lohoretz, Efter Sheyatenu Libo, a person can easily become convinced. Sheha'olam Misnaheg Alpi Hamazolos Chas V'Shom. Living in Chutz Lohoretz, knowing full well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given, as it were, dominion to guardian angels for various countries to look after their destiny, so one can very well assume, incorrectly, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not involved in Chutz La'aretz. So living in Chutz La'aretz, a person could confuse himself and think that all that is in the world is nature, and all that you need to be worried about is the laws of cause and effect, and Torah is of little consequence. Ma'ashein kein misha dor v'yeretz Yisrael, which would not be the case for a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael, shehi bilti l'Hashem levado, which belongs exclusively and which is controlled exclusively by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Pasuk says, Eretz Asherene Hashem alakecha bo mereshis hashanah v'yalach elis shanah. Since Eretz Yisrael is under the direct dominion and control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and has not been given over to any mazolos or any sorim, is vadai ein bilibo elo echad. A Jew who lives in Israel realizes that his destiny is solely in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Und er kennt sich nicht ab now. He can't fool himself to the contrary. And she'ein lo lihishoein ki im al avinu shevashamayim. And there is only one on whom to rely, which is our Father in heaven. V'tikun kolo avodas l'shem hamayuchad. And therefore realizes that whatever he does, he has to do in accordance with Torah, otherwise he won't succeed. The implication, my friends, is that the person who lives in Eretz Israel has the mile of living in Eretz Israel when it is accompanied by the realization that his survival in the land depends exclusively on his adherence to the laws of the Torah. Apparently, a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael and imagines that Eretz Yisrael is a land like all other lands and will function only if the laws of nature are adhered to like they are in Chutz La'aretz, that person is deficient in what is demanded of an individual in order to live in Eretz Yisrael. You'll say to me, fine, it makes a very nice sermon, and that's where we are. But as we'll see now, it is not so. Look at the Shailas Chuvas Avnei Nezer. Now the Avnei Nezer, we have it here, he is a son-in-law of the Menachem Mendel of Kotsk, one of the Gedolim of the Acharonim, and author of the Egle Tal, Reb Avraham Isachar, one of the major poskim. And see what he has to say. May at all, based on what I have said before, and this is section 18. I left out the other 60 sections. We'll have a look at section 18. May at all, based on what has gone before, I tell you, im yodur adam b'yeretz Yisrael, if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, the ein lo shom shum matzav parnasa, and he has no source of livelihood in Eretz Yisrael, rak hanishlach lo michutz la'aretz, but is being supported from Chutz La'aretz, right? V'yadayin hashpoas mizonos of al hasar shemichutz La'aretz. So the source of his Parnassa is from the guardian angel who has been put in charge of whatever the country the checks are being sent from. Maza Yeshiva Services, sir.
Prophet Yeshiva Services, sir.
V'zen nirali, it appears to me that precisely this reason, atam ha-gedolim shelo nosu li-Eretz Yisrael. And that's precisely the reason why so many gedolim never went to live in Eretz Yisrael. Hagam she-yeframat, even though it is possible to suggest, halo shilachum lahem rak moos, that people would only send them money, the haim konim v'yochlim peiros Eretz Yisrael, and they would buy the produce of Israel. We call Mokom, nevertheless, Mistaver Yosef. It is more than likely to be Chahai Gavne, that to live in such a fashion, Nikro is referred to as Hashpo Osam Mechutz La'aretz. Look what he's done to the Pnei Yeshua. Pnei Yeshua says, the whole mile of living in Eretz Yisrael is the recognition that your Parnassa depends exclusively on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it can't simply stop, man. You can't fool yourself. Chutz La'aretz, maybe you could fool yourself. Like the Yavne Nezer, it's a direct corollary from the Pnei Yeshua. So what happens when you're living in Eretz Yisrael, but you're being supplied by people who are earning their parnasa in Chutz La'aretz? Is it back to square one? Very major statement here. Vahare Yaakov Avinu, and is it not known in regards to Yaakov Avinu, Kol Ma Shehoy Alomi Beis Lavon, anything that he had earned in the house of Lavon, Nosan Liyesef. He gave it all away. Not like the Yema Bonim Smech a few weeks ago where he left a little bit for himself. The Medrash says he gave the whole lot away. Right? Why, says the Medrash? Because he said, Ein Nichsei Chutz Loretz Kedaili. I don't want anything from Nichsei Chutz Loretz, from property that I made in Chutz Loretz. I don't want to bring it back with me. I be afshe yikne bedomen peiros Eretz Yisrael. Even though with that money he would buy produce of Eretz Yisrael. V'yimko omar Yaakov. And if this is what Yaakov said, afshe belechto lebeis lovon. Even though, in the case of Yaakov Avinu, when he was about to set forth to bed the house of Lavan, Bikesh me Hashem Yisborach, he asked of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'nosan li lechem leachol aveged ilvoish, right? Give me bread to eat and clothes to wear. And according to the Alshich, Shebikesh, his request was, Shelo yihye parnosos of v'yemsoos hasar. I don't want my parnoso to be through the guardian angel of Chutz La'aretz where I will be, but I want my parnoso to come directly from you. Ubetach niskavlo tfiloso, and for sure his prayer was accepted. Kidechsiv, as the passage says later on in Parshas Vayishlach, in Parshas Vayetze, for erev achalom, he saw in a dream, shemaloch hevion mibeis lovon, that it was a malach as a direct emissary from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was bringing them all these cattle that were going to become his fortune. Mikol mokum, with all that, even though in Chutz La'aretz he was the exception and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was directly involved in his parnasa, Mikol Mokum, nevertheless he said, Ein Nichsei Chutz La'aretz Kedaili, I don't want anything to do with the properties which I burned in Chutz La'aretz. Is if that was the attitude of Yaakov Avinu, is doch Shah ben Yodam Ayoshim v'Yeretz Yisrael, how much more so? Other Jews who live in Israel, and who are supported by monies which are sent from Chutz La'aretz, low kolchik, and how much more so, that their parnasa is regarded as coming through the medium of the guardian angels of those countries in Chutz La'aretz where the parnasa is being sent from, and thus hastenish mitzvah yishuveres. Ubiemes. So now, of course, comes the kasha. But if Yaakov Avinu was given the promise that his parnasa was coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so why did he leave it behind? I mean, when in doubt, take it out. Okay. Ubiyemis sarich tam. Ubiyemis, we have to ask ourselves, ma oval motzi Yaakov Avinu ala mashon benichtei chutz lo shelo. What problem did he find with the nechosim? Didn't he offer a prayer? And he saw the malach in a dream? Hallo hoyom yashem yisborach shalavim soes astar. Did he not know it was coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The answer is, since his request when he set out for base level was only, I want bread to eat and clothes to wear. Minimal requests. I will crease your kesev azov, but mounds of silver and gold, shehem oisharav, which is a mighty fortune, choshash Yaakov in regards to all the rest that he had now amassed. Yaakov was afraid, ulai lo hoyo ze bichlal ha-haftocha. He was afraid that maybe with all that, this was not part of the promise which had come to him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he hadn't asked for it. Ubo lo b'yemsos hasar. And maybe he might be under a misapprehension, and in fact the wealth that he had now amassed hadn't come directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all, because he'd only asked for beget lilbosh lechem lechel. Lochein, therefore, nitnom li Esav, he gave them to Esav. Is memele, as a result of which we conclude, hadorim b'yeretz Yisrael, that those who live in Eretz Yisrael, whom espanisim imoris chutz la'aretz, and who are supported by money from chutz la'aretz, li'anias deity, to my humble opinion, shememayakim ha-mitzvah, they have certainly lessened the observance of the mitzvah, ve'eino borur klal im yekaimu ha-mitzvah. And I'm not even convinced that they are fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's something to be reckoned with. I mean, not that the support is going to come like it used to come, but we'll leave that to the newspapers. But Lemaisa, we have here a very, very major statement here. And it all comes back again to the Pnei Yeshua. Because the whole idea of Kolador B'Yisrael, Dovah Kihilu, Yeshlo Aloka, is because in Eretz Yisrael, you're under no misapprehension as to where the source of your panasa comes from. Comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if it comes in the post, that seemingly is something completely different. As Eshtet and Avnei Nezer. And it's a marimokal. I have to tell you the honest truth. I mean, I'm not going to extend this matter at the moment, due to end of 10:10. But Lemaisa, there is, on this statement of the Avnei Nezer, a very major essay by the previous Satmar Rav Zichud Adnei Brach, in Vayoel Moshe. And he has a lot of very, very challenging comments to make in regards to this thesis. And only one or two that I want to mention to you. I was going to bring in the safer, but there's only so much you can Xerox. But Lemaisa, the Satmar Rav ever says, so Yaakov Avinu left it all behind and gave it to Esav. So when Pharaoh showered Avraham Avinu with gifts after the Maisa with sorrow, as related to the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, why didn't Avraham Avinu leave it behind? And if bringing money out from Chutz La'aretz into Eretz Yisrael is such an avle in regard to mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so what was the big deal where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, remember to tell the Bnei Yisrael when they're leaving Mitzrayim that they're going to take the fortunes with them? And at that time when they were leaving Egypt, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intention that they should go directly to Eretz Yisrael in a matter of days, weeks, but certainly not years. And seemingly there was no problem whatsoever in asking Moshe Rabbeinu to entreat of the Bnei Yisrael that they take the money out of them, so that Avraham Avinu shouldn't have a taina. On the contrary, according to the Avnei Nezer, be a bigger taina. They're going to come to Eretz Yisrael with a fortune, and until the money runs out, they're not being Mekayim Mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So it's a lot to say about this particular matter, but we'll leave that for the moment. Okay. So we've said a little bit about Shemitah. It's only appropriate that we should say a few words about Yovel. And find out what Yovel is. You'll go a little over, but you'll have to wait. Somebody once said, the Abarbanel said, that the purpose of Shemitah and Yovel, there's an added element in it. And that is, a person feels that he has so much time, he doesn't need to be worried about what happens to every minute of every day. After all, there's 24 hours a day, and there's 7 days in a week, and how many weeks in a year, and Baruch Hashem, I mean, you may should have seen a Mehemshiva Mishana, you live 70 years, and now with modern medicine, by the time we get to 70, we'll be able to live to 90, by the time we get to 90, we'll be able to live to a Says the Abarbanel, to introduce a note of sobriety into the proceedings, we have Shmittah and Yovel, because the individual Jew has to say to himself, how many Shmittahs does a Jew see in a lifetime? How many Yovels does a Jew see in a lifetime? If you're lucky, you see two. So the union of Shemitah and Yovel is to restore a certain sense of perspective to how much time we really have on this earth, and to encourage us to maximize what it is that we can do in this particular matter. So it's well worth remembering. I mean, nobody even knows when the next Yovel is due. And we can't even remember the last one was. But of one thing we can be sure, we're not going to see too many. So let's have a look now in regards to the whole union of Yovel. And we go back now to Perek Chafei Pasuk Tes. Some gorgeous inyanim here. First First of all, where is the name Yovel? What does Yovel mean? Says Rashi. On Posuk Yud, Yovel he. Shana Zos Muvdeles Misha Shonim Benekivas Shem La Levado. This year is separate from all other years. It's got its own name. Uma Shema, what is its name? Yovel Shema. Its name is Yovel. Al Shem Tekiyas Shofar. Because as Rashi mentions in Parshas Yisro, on the words B'mshoch HaYovel, Hema Yalu Bahar, Rashi says that Yovel is an Aramaic word for a horn, for sheep. And since the horn is made from the ram, so therefore it's called Yovel, because as you know, on the Yom Kippur of Yovel, the shofar is sounded, and that introduces all the dinim of Yovel. Interesting, at a time when so many Jews are coming out of Soviet Union and other places, interesting to see the Ramban on Yovel. You'll find it at the bottom of the page in the Mikros Gedolos, about two lines from the bottom with a fi ani hasdaiti. Ulefi dati, and according to my understanding, lo koru akos of Yovel alatekia. The word Yovel is not used in order to refer to the shofar. That's not why the year is called Yovel. Rak haladror. It's called Yovel because of the freedom that is brought about in that year. How do I know that the word Yovel, even though it refers to shofar in Parshas Yisro, does not refer to the shofar in this case? Kilo hiskir Hashem azeh b'kos of Orishon. Because it wasn't called Yovel, the shofar, in the previous verse. But it introduces the sounding of the shofar with the words, v'ha'avarto shofar teruah. So if it's called a shofar in Pasuk Tes, why would we call it a Yovel in Pasuk Yud? So certainly Yovel, says the Ramban, disagreeing with Rashi, Yovel does not mean a shofar. Aval Omar, but what does it refer to? Because the Torah tells us in regards to the year of Yovel. Ukurosem dero ba'oris l'chol yosheveha. You shall proclaim freedom in the land to all its inhabitants. Sheyihiyu kulam b'nei chorim, that they all should be free. L'adur b'chol makam sheyirtsu. Because the word deror, as we see in Rashi, is related to the word door, to live. Freedom is the ability to live where you want to live. Ukurosem deror. As Rashi says on deror, Omer Rav Yehuda mahu loshen deror, ki medaya veidaira, shedor b'chol mokum shehu rotze, v'yeinu v'reshus acherim. If you want to define freedom, freedom is the ability to go where you want to go. Freedom is not the ability to go into a shop, but you've got to stay inside the country. Freedom is the ability to move. V'yoma yovel hi, and therefore the word yovel is used in regard to this year, shebo, because in that year, yuval kol ish elachuzoso. Everybody moves back to his family holding, v'yel mishpachto yoviluhu raglov, and his feet moving back to his family, merachok, from distant place, nogu. So the word yovel comes from the word lehovil, to move. There is movement. There is freedom of movement in that year. You go exactly wherever it is you want to go. So where Rashi says yovel is in regards to the sounding of the shofar, says the Ramban, yovel is the word hovola, yuval. It's a verb of movement, of motion, because in that year people are free to go to the places where they want to go. Slave is free to go. People move back to their tribal holdings, their family plots, etc. So again I emphasize, the shofar is not referred to as Yovel, says the Ramban. Yovel is an expression of freedom of movement. Now, the last thing that I want to offer this evening is in regards to the Rashi B'Yom HaKippurim. What happens? When is the shofar sounded? Pasuk Tes. V'havarta shofar teruah b'chodesh hashviyi. You shall sound the shofar in the seventh month, v'yasor l'chodesh, on the tenth of the month, v'Yom HaKippurim, on the day of Yom Kippur, ta'aviru shofar b'chol ha'artzechem. The shofar shall be sounded in all your lands. Now you know and I know, says Rashi, that you've already told me that it's going to be sounded on the 10th day of the 7th month, and that's Yom Kippur. So why tell me again the Yom HaKippurim? Says Rashi. Mi mashma shenem aviyoma kipurim. Since the posuk says biyoma kipurim, eini yodea shehu be'asor lachodesh, do I not know that it is on the 10th of the month? Im kein, if so, lomo nema, why does it say be'asor lachodesh? Give us a double definition of when it is to be sounded. Elo loma lachobot, it is to say to you the following. Tekiyo be'asor lachodesh doche shabbos b'cholachachem. The sounding of the shofar on Yom Kippur, which is on the 10th of the month in the Jubilee year, will even be able to push aside Shabbos, even if Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos. V'yein tekiyas Rosh Hashanah doche Shabbos b'chol ha'atzachem. But if Rosh Hashanah were to fall on a Shabbos, you can't sound the shofar in your land. Ela be'beis din v'levad, only in the place where the beis din is assembled. It appears from here that according to Rashi, there are redundant words, I don't say the word redundant, but words that appear to us to be superfluous. And the purpose of these words is to bring with it the message that there is only one sounding of a shofar which can be Deicha Shabbos, and that's the sounding of the shofar on the Yom Kippur of the Jubilee year. Implication being, says Rashi, that if Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, there is no way in which the shofar can be sounded. Says the Rambam, let me just, since we're coming towards the end, let me just mention to you the Ramban's kasha, and then we'll have a look at the Chasam Sofer's answer. Says the Ramban, when you look at Rashi, which is quoting Toras Kohanim, you come to the conclusion that the prohibition of sounding a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbos, is a prohibition from the Torah. Because the redundant words are to convey the information that unlike Yom HaKippurim of Yovel, Shechal Yosef and Shabbos, which the Kiyah shofar may be sounded, but if Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, the shofar can be sounded, implying that it is a Torah prohibition. Says the Ramban, I know that Rashi is a fine scholar, but this is not right. Because you know and I know that the reason why you are not allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbos, has nothing at all to do with the Torah, because the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that it's a chokhmah, not a melacha, for those people who can manage it. Right? So blowing it is, it's a knack. It's not a work. Although I have rachmanos on some people towards the end, but nevertheless. But it's a chokhmah, it's not a melacha. So why are we not allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shabbos? Because a person may want to learn how to do the shofar properly, and he may carry it daladam, his mirishus adavim. That's a rabbinic prohibition. So what's Rashi implying here, that the prohibition against blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on an ordinary on a Shabbos, is a Torah prohibition? It's nothing of the kind. So that's the Ramban's kasha. Says the Chasam Sofer, I'm very sorry to have to tell you, but even if you don't like what it is that Rashi quotes, but Rashi's not making it up. Rashi is quoting from the Toras Kohanim. And the Toras Kohanim is telling you that the words which appear to be redundant in the pasuk are to tell you that whereas when Yom Kippur of Yovel falls on Shabbos, you may sound a shofar, but the shofar may not be sounded on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbos. Now that's the Toras Kohanim. You can pick a fight with Rashi, but you can't pick a fight with the Toras Kohanim. So we're back to square one. What does the Toras Kohanim mean? And we'll conclude with the Chasam Sofer's reply, leaving out the part that I've just put in brackets. First of all, he brings Rashi, who quotes Chazal as a Sifrei, that it is the shofar of Yom Kippur, which is Deicha Shabbos in all our lands, but not only in Rosh Hashanah, only in the Beis Din. And that's a remez in the Rosh Hateva's shofar Teruah B'chol, which is Shabbos. Okay. The Ramban asks, he says, shofar is a chachma, v'yena melacha, v'lo ne'esar, and it's only been forbidden, and mishum shema yavarenu ayim shom. So the Ramban raises the kasha on the Toras Kohanim, but as the Chasam Sofer is quick to point out, velo yishev divrei Chazal. But the Ramban didn't offer us an interpretation of the Chazal that Rashi quoted. Udroshes yitur akra, and the Ramban did not give us his own interpretation of why there are what appears to be redundant words in the pasuk. Now listen to what a master does with this Chazal. Ulefi ani esdaiti. To my humble opinion, I want to explain the Teilat Kohanim, which is quoted by Rashi in the following way. And I base my commentary and my interpretation on what the Ramban writes in Parshas Emor, Shavus Dioraisu Shalolasos Uvda de Chol Likach Velimkor Uchadoma Ayin Shom Milse Betama. Now, this is a piece of information that you have to know. There are 39 forbidden works on Shabbos. Lametes Melochos. There are many other items which are forbidden midarabonon. Buying and selling. Called Uvda de Chol. Weekday activities. And we call them Shavus. Says the Ramban in Parshas Emor, and Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Chav Dalet, that you should not reach an erroneous conclusion and assume that when the Gemara refers to these prohibitions as midrabanon, that they are totally without Torah basis whatsoever. In reality, the Torah has forbidden any type of activity which resembles a weekday activity. Says the Ramban, it is contained in the words, Yihyeh lochem Shabboson. It will be a day for you of Shabboson, where you don't involve yourself in weekday activities. Aye, why do we call them Shavus Dirabonon? If in reality there is a positive commandment in the Torah to refrain from these weekday activities? Says the Chasam Sofer, because whereas the Torah left it as a general precept that you have to refrain from weekday activities, it was the rabbis who detailed exactly what these weekday activities are that you have to refrain from. So what we know is that any type of weekday activity which is commercial in nature is forbidden min ha-Torah on Shabbos. And the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah says, this is what we have been mekabel from the Ramban when it says Emes v'yatsif. Now, says the Chasam Sofer, basing myself on that Ramban, I would now like to explain the Teiras Kohanim. V'yahan ki shofar yom ha-kippurim hu meshachre kol ha-avodim hu machzir kol ha-sodos levaleihem hu milsor avo ovid v'hoyo roi le'esor min ha-torah b'yom ha-shevisa. What happens when the shofar is sounded in Yom Kippur? Not just the sounding of a shofar. Fields go back to their owners. Slaves go back and are free people. The sounding of the shofar is an act which has commercial overtone. And therefore there was a svara that type of shofar sound should not be heard on Yom Kippur, which falls on Shabbos. Because it's not just the sounding of a shofar. The sounding of the shofar on Yom Kippur, which falls on Shabbos in Yovel, is a sounding which has ramifications in the commercial, economic life of the community. Says the Chasam Sofer, so how come you're allowed to sound the shofar on Yom Kippur Shechali Yais B'Shabbos in Yovel? Says the Chasam Sofer, after the brackets, the hatam leheter, the reason why it is permitted, is ki kivar niftorim avodim yavodosim v'rosh Hashanah v'chein asodos eloch she'enam chozinim ad yom ha-kippurim. V'im kein ha-shofar hazeh loy ovid dovid sholem kivar nase v'rosh Hashanah. The reason why you're allowed to blow that shofar on Yom Kippur, which falls on Shabbos and Yovel, is because in reality, the release of those slaves from the dominion of their master, the release of those fields from the ownership of the people who bought them for a fixed time, begins on Rosh Hashanah. But it's all in limbo. And it's only when the shofar is sounded 10 days later on Yom Kippur that the slaves may move back and the fields move back. But the enterprise was begun in the main on Rosh Hashanah. So since the enterprise was begun in the main on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is only, as it were, a token gesture which says what was ordained on Rosh Hashanah can now be put into effect on Yom Kippur. So therefore, the blowing of the shofar on Yom Kippur, which falls on Shabbos of Yovel, is in fact a sounding of the shofar, which has no commercial ramifications whatsoever, because those ramifications were made on the day of Rosh Hashanah of the Jubilee year. Aye, if that is when it was made, then Hotmadach HaShaila. What about Rosh Hashanah of the Jubilee year, which falls on Shabbos? When do we discover whether it is Rosh Hashanah today or not? We're not living in Jerusalem. When do we realize it? We know it's only Rosh Hashanah when Beis Din have accepted the testimony. And we only discover that it's Rosh Hashanah when the shofar is sounded. Vehu asa hakinyan hagamur. And that is the sounding of the shofar, which has the commercial overtones. Because whereas Rosh Hashanah is the moment when fields are released, and slaves are released, and on Yom Kippur only they go back, but the release takes place on Rosh Hashanah. How do we know when it's Rosh Hashanah? We know it's Rosh Hashanah only because the shofar is sounding. So if you want to find out what is the shofar sound, which has commercial and economic ramifications, which are forbidden by the Torah, als mitzvah saseh, to be performed on a Shabbos, that's the sounding of the shofar on the Rosh Hashanah of Yovel that happens to fall on Shabbos. Al kain, therefore, kishechal Rosh Hashanah shel Yovel b'Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah of Yovel falls on a Shabbos, lo yiska vo ela b'Beis Din. The only place where it can be sounded is in Beis Din. Says the Chasam Sofer, that is what the Teiras Kehani means. When we are told that on Yom Kippur, even if it falls on Shabbos, you can sound the shofar, that's the Shabbos, Yom Kippur of Yovel, the implication being that on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbos, you cannot. That's referring to the Rosh Hashanah of a normal year, which falls on Shabbos. It's referring to the Rosh Hashanah of Yovel, which falls on Shabbos. Then you can't blow the shofar on that day. Because the sounding of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah of Yovel is a signal that Rosh Hashanah has arrived. That's the way the Hamonam discover. And when Rosh Hashanah of Yovel arrives, commercial activities take place, namely the release of slaves and the release of property. And commercial activity is forbidden according to the Ramban in Parshas Emor, min haTorah. Therefore, it follows that the Torah forbade the sounding of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos, when it is Rosh Hashanah of Yovel, the Cholach Sechem, throughout all our countries, Midioraisa. But the only place where it may be blown, because after all it has to be blown in some place, is only in the Beis Din, and that is the exception which proves the rule. So we'll leave it over here.